Chair calls the order to order today's meeting of the House Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. Clerk, would you take the roll, please?
Representative Smith?
Here.
Shemansky?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Champion is excused. Cornish?
Here.
Grunhagen?
Here.
Gillstrom?
Here.
Reisel?
Here.
Main is excused. Lesh? Liebling?
Here.
Hazard?
Here.
Schumacher?
Here.
Tilbury?
Here.
Vogel?
Here.
Wardlow?
Here.
Chair notes the presence of a quorum, so we'll proceed. We have one bill on the calendar, but before we get to that, we have the minutes from February 3rd in the packet. Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Representative Kressel moves approval of the minutes from February 3. Any discussion? If not, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. Before we proceed, I see we have a group of young folks here with us today, the high school pages. We're glad you're here. Welcome. All right, we have one bill, Representative Cornish, House File 141.
Better be a dog. That's all I'm saying.
Representative Cornish, how many testifiers do you have, and where's the dog?
Well, we, Mr. Chair and members, we didn't bring the dog in today, but we have, I think, so far, one testifier, and if I could, I'll give an introduction and bring him down later if you don't mind.
Yes, let's do that. Besides your one testifier, anyone present wishing to be heard on House File 141, could you raise your hand, please? I don't see any. So, Representative Cornish, do you want to move your bill, and then let's proceed.
Hey, Mr. Chair and members, I'd like to move House File 141 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
All right, the bill's before us. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, House File 141 is a bill that addresses restitution on canines injured in the line of duty, and canines such as one on the half of my tie, or it could be of a different breed. This happens to be my favorite because I carried a shepherd canine with me for 13 years while I was a game warden. This bill, what it would do is define the difference between great bodily harm and substantial bodily harm, and assign restitution. In the previous committee, I believe the restitution costs were raised from $15,000 to $25,000, and on the in the new line, that would be on the first page with line 1.18, and on the back, I believe they were on 2.6, raised from $5,000 to $10,000 in the previous committee. As far as I know, Mr. Chair, the bill has no opponents, nobody testified against it, and it has noted no fiscal impact. And basically, I'd like to bring my testifier up to tell them the need for the proposal and get some testimony.
Thank you, Representative. And just to recap what you said, members, the fiscal note completed is in your packet. It appears to show zero impact. And I'd ask the testifier to please identify yourself and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Rick Mathwig. I'm the Chief of Police of Roseville. Officer John Jurgensen, actually, you were scheduled to testify in front of the Senate subcommittee this afternoon, so I'm hoping he has the over at the Capitol side, so hopefully he's wandering from that room to this room. But as what was the last subcommittee spoke about, Officer Jurgensen and Mark Ficadini, the head trainer for St. Paul Police Department, spoke about the importance of public safety dogs, especially police canines, in their relationship to the entire state of Minnesota. Our department, my department, Roseville Police Department, has three canines. And most of their work, as John testified at the last committee, is done with their nose. About 95% of their work is done with their nose, and about 5% is done with the apprehension part. And our dogs are cross-trained for finding articles, lost guns, tossed out in the weeds, marijuana, controlled substances. Our dogs have found a number of Alzheimer's patients in Roseville that have been wandered and lost at times of the night where they could have perished within a few hours. Our apprehensions and our dogs have assisted St. Anthony Police, New Brighton Police, Mounds View, and other parts of that of Ramsey County that do not have dogs. And we've received actually a lot of thank you letters from the City of St. Anthony Police Department, so much that it's kind of a side joke now when he sends letters to us. It's so often that we help it. So when Major's injury happened in November, he, based on the great care done by the University of Minnesota, his life was saved. But his capacity to work as a police dog was killed. And that is why this bill is so important to move forward. The restitution part was upwardly departed last commission, which is actually fortuitous for us. Major's care at the University of Minnesota from the date of injury through the end of January is now at just over $23,000. We're going to have a press conference in a couple weeks to talk about that when the sentencing for the suspect in this case, actually he's been convicted, so he's a criminal in this case. The restitution would have come in handy and would have been actually mandatory for us to get another dog, but because of donations throughout the entire country, we have over $27,000 in donations, and the first $20,000 of that was actually averaged $50 from a person. We had donations from all across the country. A lot of people came from everywhere. If not for that, it would be very difficult for the Roseville Police Department to afford another police canine. And Mark Ficchietti from St. Paul Police Department talked last time about what it costs. And some of the members were at that, so I don't want to digest too much time in that. But it is about $10,000. And the reason for that is they're imported from the Czech Republic and other parts of that part of the world, because the American German Shepherds have a problem with their hips and hips dysplasia and things like that these dogs are specifically bred for police work across the world. And so it is very, very expensive for a police department to find another dog, labor intensive. The training that John and other canine handlers will go through is at least 3 months long. And that's a position that the handler is off the street. And we have staffing issues with our department and vacation time and things like that, so there's an expense above that. So it is very nice, and we're very thankful that the restitution is made as mandatory, and it's also where it is. What I would like to point out is in understanding, and Representative Cornish has been apprehensive about pushing us forward for the financial impact, is what the canine associations, the region around this area, have been looking for is actually two versions of a felony. And the mandatory restitution applies to both, but for death and great bodily harm, what they're asking for is that to be a separate felony. Within this law, the highest penalty would be for death and great bodily harm. A second felony with a lesser sentence would be substantial bodily harm. And I say substantially because that's the extent of Major's injuries today. If substantial bodily harm would follow the assault on people that is recognized in Minnesota statutes and case history as to what that is, the doctors, especially where we go at regions, are very adept at identifying substantial bodily harm. And now the University of Minnesota Veterinary Hospital is also adept in defining substantial bodily harm. The reason why substantial bodily harm is a felony in itself is important because that's what Major, those are his injuries. His life as a police canine was killed that day, but his life is still there, especially due to John's quick actions at the scene in Maplewood and also the University of Minnesota Veterinary Hospital. So that's what kept him alive. But he is out of service as a police canine. So that has affected not only Roseville Police, it's also affected, as I talked about, New Brighton and Mounds View and St. Anthony police departments that rely on dogs. So I can understand that Representative Cornish's apprehension moving forward because it may have an impact as we go further with the Department of Corrections and things like that. But we're asking for that amendment to make the obviously leave the restitution in there, but have great bodily harm and death be one felony and then a lower level felony, such as sentencing for substantial bodily harm. And that's all the position that we're going to take this afternoon with the Senate subcommittee. Unless John sneak in behind me, I'm done with my presentation. I can certainly try to answer as many questions as I can, Mr. Chairman.
Chief, we'll go to questions. Good testimony. Thank you. In plain English, the status of the dog. I saw the dog walk in here on his front legs,
yep.
But he had a cradle or a harness or something around his backside. He had to be his tail end had to be carried in here because he cannot use his rear legs. He's totally paralyzed. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, that is right. He is fitted with a cart, which is basically a dog wheelchair. And what John has been using recently has been that harness to support his back ends. And when John brought Major by the police department a couple weeks ago, Major was still pulling ahead, so John had to have a regular leash on his collar and the carrier in the back to slow him down. So that's where he is. He did receive, I think about 3 weeks ago, some stem cell research through the University of Minnesota. That's an exploratory type program. And they injected stem cells at the location of his injury, which is about a third of the way down his back. And if all goes well, it grows a millimeter a day. And I haven't done the math to figure out where that needs to go to get to his hips area. But that's where he's at right now.
Any questions from members of this committee? Representative Greenhagen.
Mr. Chair, Chief Jordan.
I'm sorry.
If this was a human being, would the penalty be the same, more, or less than what this bill imposes?
The
Chief?
I'm sorry, Chair. There are different versions of the assault on a person would be more on this particular case, because injuring someone with a knife like this is second-degree assault. That's attempt to kill. And that is, I don't know what the sentencing is in front of me, but that is a much higher felony as far as sentencing goes than the assault against the dog.
So,
Representative Greenhagen.
Follow. So, and you're Chief Mathwick, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I apologize for using Jorgensen there. So, in other words, the penalty, if it was done to a human being, would be higher than than this bill, correct?
Chief.
I understand correctly.
Chief.
Mr. Chair, at currently state statute, it would be a seven-year penalty, seven-year felony.
So that would be more?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Apologize, Representative Liebling. I went out of order. It was my error. I'll see that it doesn't happen again.
No problem, Mr. Chair, no problem at all. Well, thank you very much for your testimony. I have no problem at all with raising the restitution amount. That seems perfectly reasonable. And, you know, everybody, I think, has to feel terrible about what happened to the dog. So I just want to get those issues out of the way. That's not my concern here. You know, I certainly think there ought to be penalties for harming a police dog. But I really question why we want to raise the great bodily harm piece to a felony. And the reason I am asking is because, from what I'm looking at here, apparently this hardly ever happens. It says here as part of the fiscal note that there were no felony convictions for the death of a police dog from 91 to 2009. No felony convictions. Now, I assume that there was obviously we know there was some great bodily harm done during that time, but, you know, I just am wondering, other than making us all feel like we've done something to prevent this, you know, what does it really do in terms of protecting dogs to change this to a felony? Because it hardly ever happens, and I doubt there are many instances where someone sets out to do this kind of harm. I'm imagining that it mostly probably happens in the course of an arrest, where somebody's trying to prevent their arrest by harming the dog. Or maybe they're afraid of the dog and trying to, you know, defend themselves against the dog. I don't know, but I just wondered, what does it do for us in terms of public safety? And the reason I ask that is because, you know, even though the fiscal note is nothing, it isn't cost-free, and I guess Representative Cornish has some concerns about this as well. In here, the public defender's note that it's going to have some impact on them, that, you know, if there are more cases, more people who are charged with a higher crime tend to not plead guilty. They're going to fight it more. There are going to be more appeals and so on. So what do we get? What's our bang for the buck in terms of public safety from that piece of this bill?
Chief Mathwick, I'd like you to answer that question. Any follow-up the representative may have? And then I want to go to Officer Jorgensen next. So please answer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll let John handle some of the statistics that goes, but in this particular case, yes, you are correct that it doesn't happen very often, which is a wonderful thing.
Sure.
I talked about the importance of police canines across the Minnesota, but in this particular case, the criminal in this case did not make an accident into assaulting Major. He was lying in wait with a butterfly knife, opened it up, held it there until Major made the apprehension. That's the important piece in this case that I think the commission needs to remember as far as we go forward on this law. As far as assaulting a police canine, it's very difficult to injure the dog. You don't just stumble into a felony assault in this case. It's someone who was secreted in a dense wooded area, waited for something to come. And it's the good thing is that it wasn't a police officer that stuck his or her head in those woods. It was Major that found him. So in this particular case, this is a very serious criminal who needs to face some time for his actions. And that's my quick retort or quick response to it. I'll let John talk about some other statistics and things like that.
Representative Liebling, anything further?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I guess the question is, you know, if this bill was law at the time, would that have changed anything? I mean, that's the thing. Do people sit and think, well, gee, it's not going to be a felony. It's only going to be a gross misdemeanor. Therefore, it's okay if I do this. And I guess my other question my other point would be that a person who would be doing this is probably going to be somebody who's committed some other crime and is going to face serious penalties anyway. Wouldn't that be the case?
Chief Mathwick.
Mr. Chair, I've been in the business 23 years. I try not to think how a criminal thinks because sometimes there's a departure in straightforward thought. But in this case, it does set the table for corrective action by court services, the Department of Corrections and things like that to hold someone accountable for their actions and work with treatment in Department of Corrections and things like that so they do not repeat themselves. But it's difficult to foresee what a criminal is going to do because it's difficult to read their mind. And I've tried not to do that for about 20-some years in my 23 years.
Representative Liebling, anything else?
Well, just briefly, Mr. Chair, but, you know, I understand, you know, you can't speculate about how they might think, but this bill kind of is premised on, I appreciate what you say about giving options for, you know, intervention after the fact, but I mean, if this bill is going to have any public safety impact, it's premised on the idea that somebody's going to make that distinction. And, you know, frankly, I think most people don't think that way, and especially in this kind of situation, it's hard for me to think that somebody's going to be considering that it's a felony rather than a gross misdemeanor and that's going to make a difference in their behavior. So, you know, if you have any more on that, you know, I'd like to hear it, but
Officer Jorgensen, you're here to testify. If you gentlemen could exchange seats, I'd like to have you at the table. We're going to go to testimony. Officer Jorgensen, I think I've heard you testify before. You're up next. You do an excellent job at testifying. But kind of, if you can, also put in plain English, when you testify, is this just a dog running around at a crime scene, or is this dog an extension of you, if you're the handler and the officer called in at that moment? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, excellent verbiage. The dog is a complete extension of the handler or law enforcement in general. The dog won't take action unless given so by the handler. The only time the dog would be allowed to take action without direction from me or their handler would be if there was a direct attack on me. The dog is trained to protect me if I'm unable to protect myself. Other than that, that dog is a complete extension of what we're trying to do. There has to be certain specific criteria in place for us to deploy our dogs.
Officer, and just excuse me, just to make it clear, you are the officer that was handling this dog at that particular moment.
That is correct. I am Canine Major's handler, Mr. Chair, and typically, especially in the state of Minnesota, the dog is only assigned to one handler. And that's important for a multitude of reasons. That dog only has one master, so to speak, and they know who to listen to and who to be looking for direction. And again, that dog does look for direction from me or a different specific handler with their dog, whether they're trying to seek out narcotics or we want them to apprehend a suspect. In order for us to apprehend a suspect, as I said, there has to be certain criteria in place. As you had mentioned earlier, or as I heard mentioned earlier, there are usually greater crimes involved here. We don't deploy our dogs on generally on misdemeanor crimes, gross misdemeanor crimes. Usually they're of the felony level crimes, which is where this current law sometimes gets lost in the shuffle, where we're going to end up apprehending a suspect that's maybe wanted for burglary or robbery, maybe firearms offenses, and then they maybe assault our police dog, and we have this gross misdemeanor crime just kind of hanging out here in the wind. That crime is going to lose out when it comes to charging purposes. We're going to charge with the, usually with the higher level crimes, the felony level crimes. The current law that we have in place, in my opinion, kind of gets lost in the shuffle because of that.
Any questions? Or we do have questions at the committee table. Representative Greenhagen.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. I find myself agreeing with Representative Liebling's rationale that she presented, and I just encourage her to work with I'm not a lawyer, and there's just a sense that that it's a little bit, I hate to say the word, overkill, because you have the compensation piece in here anyway for the $25,000 on the dog, and so I just encourage her to work with Representative Cornish and clarify her concerns about the bill, and because I have the same sense that she's bringing forth, only I don't have the legal background to probably articulate it as well as she does.
Any further questions of this witness from the committee? Otherwise, we're going to close testimony and discuss the bill. Any discussion? Any further questions? Any discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cornish renews the motion that House File 141 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register. Hearing a further discussion, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion prevails. Your bill is on its way. Thank you.
Thank you.
Officer and Chief, thank you very much for taking time and being with us today. All right. Again, to the pages, thank you for being with us today. And unless there's a burning desire to sit here for another hour, as chairman sees no further business before this committee, the meeting is adjourned.